All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, I've got Colby Mack joining me. It's been a while since he's been on the show, and we are going to be talking about a movie that a lot of people did not like very much, but the both of us loved it. That movie is called Malcolm and Marie, from writer-director Sam Levinson, starring John David Washington and Zendaya. And it is a movie where the two of them are at each other's throats, as well as at critics' throats, for 2 hours long in a house shot in black and white. A lot of people, like I said, do not like this movie. I'm sure we'll get a lot of pushback on our celebration of this film and its influences here in the coming conversation. But you know what? This movie is what it is, and I think we did a pretty good job of talking about what it is that we like so much about this thing. So that is coming up here in a second, but as always, I want to remind you all that if you're not subscribed to Piecing It Together yet, you should subscribe to Piecing It Together. We are, of course, on all of the major podcast apps. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And we also have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post advanced episodes of Piecing It Together. There's also bonus content from Awesome Movie Year podcast, which is another movie podcast that I produce. We just recently did a bonus episode on Purple Rain, Prince's Purple Rain, for the conclusion of the 1984 season of that podcast. And that is up on the Patreon right now. That is a fun episode. There's also a lot of bonus content from my music career as well. I'm actually working on the score for a feature-length film right now, and as soon as I finish it, I'm going to release that score as a bonus album on the Patreon. So check that out. Produced by David Rosen. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Lots of great content there. So with all that said, let's jump into our conversation on Malcolm and Marie. All right, so it's been a while, but back on the show. We finally got him back. It's Colby Mack. How's it going, Colby?
Yo, 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 what up? It's your boy, Colby Mack, and I'm finally back. It's been a while indeed on the Piecing It Together podcast. Yeah!
It's always so great to hear your voice on a podcast. You just know the energy is just going to be through the roof, you know?
I'm telling you, man. I got to trademark it, bottle it, and sell it.
Yes, that's true. Well, you know, this movie we're about to talk about, Malcolm and Marie, you've been getting around with this one, huh? How many podcasts have you done on this movie?
This is number 8.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've done 3 before, I think, including, you know, my own and then guest appearances. That's a lot of times talking about the same movie, but hopefully we'll be able to squeeze a few different things out of you here with, you know, the whole puzzle pieces format and all that.
I think that's what attracts me to keep doing these guest spots, because the more and more that I talk about this film, varying perspectives and lens lend itself to the different sides of the conversation for me to be able to reply to things that I continue to learn and discern from.
Right. And we are both on the side of this movie is great. And to be clear at the top of the conversation here, a lot of people do not agree with us. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the reasons possibly why this movie is just, I don't even want to say not connecting, because I feel like people are approaching it from the point of view of, it's bad, now let me watch the movie and decide I was right that this is bad. That's what it kind of feels like. Does it feel that way for you?
Absolutely. And I think it ends up bearing out what Sam Levinson's point to the entirety of the film was. We bring so much into these films. Mm-hmm. And for you and I, who talk about this as like an elevated hobby, right? One day we're going to get super paid for this shit. I'm telling you.
That's right.
You know, but essentially, we bring in, I don't want to call it baggage. I mean, because that's art, right? Like, it's the way that we appreciate it based off of what we bring to it, what we take from it, right? Yeah. But we can project a lot of shit onto it as well. So, the film is so much more divisive than I ever thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And I'm going to kick this off with the first puzzle piece here. Usually I throw to my guest first, but I'm going to just throw this one in here really quick. And it's not because the story or any of the themes necessarily line up with what's going on with Malcolm and Marie, but there's something behind the scenes that I wanted to bring this into the conversation. And that's a movie that we had discussed possibly doing, but then scheduling didn't work out. It's a movie called Waves from 2019, written and directed by Trey Edward Schultz. And a lot of people did not want to allow for this movie to, you know, have any merit based on the fact that we have a white filmmaker making a movie that's predominantly a black story with mostly black characters and unapologetically doing it. Now, Malcolm and Marie really is not a black story. It's more so just that the two main characters, the only characters, happen to be. And so it's definitely a very different thing. But I feel like it's almost a similar pushback in a way, where Trey Edward Schultz got so much shit for writing this particular movie, Waves, which was, I think, a fantastic movie. And I think people who gave it a chance really enjoyed it, too.
Yeah, I mean, see, I think that's why I love doing your podcast, because you will harken back to films that I never even thought of, like, trying to, like, piece it together. I'm like, shit, yes, I see the waves in this. And it's a lot of it's because of the commentary, right?
Yes.
In no way did I ever perceive, one, Malcolm and Marie as a black film.
Sure.
Nor did I perceive Waves as a black film. Mm-hmm. Waves, in my top five of 2019, you know, if y'all don't know, all right, Kelvin Harrison Jr. is my man.
Yeah.
And that year, he gave us Loose and Waves. Oh, gosh. Woo. But, like, you're right. What Trey Edward Schultz was doing, and obviously he has a connection, you know, with Kelvin Harrison Jr. because they've worked on several projects already, mm-hmm. right? This is just a guy who essentially, kind of like what Malcolm, has a muse, right?
Sure.
There's a storyteller who, let's say, you know, KHJ is his muse and, you know, wants to be able to have a story that's authentic. And it's funny enough because authenticity is one of the major themes inside of Malcolm and Marie.
Absolutely.
What's unique about with Waves is that I remember after watching that movie and then, like, knowing that, you know, it was this dude, I'm like, yo, who gave Trey Edward Schultz a black card, right?
Yeah.
But that's, you know what? But that's me. And one, I have license to do that as a black TV and film critic,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But, like, in the way that we talk about a black film, one, I challenge anyone who's listening. I want you to go to Google and just type in, what is a black film? And you want to know essentially what the response is, the main one, right? It says, a black film is a classification of film in Hollywood that has a broad definition relating to the film involving participation and or representation of black people. Mm. Okay, I can kind of see that in both synthesis. The definition may involve the film having a black cast, a black crew, a black director, a black story, or so pretty much anything can be a black film.
Sure.
But what it's predominantly kind of like, you know, what the narrative that goes around to it is almost like a message movie, right? Like, what is this black film saying, right? And that's exactly what Malcolm, the character, is challenging.
Sure.
One of my favorite lines from the film is when he's like, in regards to, like, not every movie has to have a meaning in it, right?
Yeah.
It just needs to have a heart and electricity. Like, that's what he wants his art to be able to speak to. And the people who take that art and try to make it into something else, that's what he doesn't like.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know?
And I think, you know, obviously with this conversation, we're going to stick mostly to the whole influences thing and all that stuff with the puzzle pieces. But there is so much of a conversation around this movie and about intention of the filmmaker and of the story being told. And I just think that there is a proper intention here with this particular movie in a similar way with Waves, which is just a really interesting story to tell, which, by the way, you're right, is not, you know, necessarily a black movie. But funny enough, though, when I was researching before doing this episode, I found it on a list of black movies from 2019. I was like, oh, interesting. Somebody put it on that list. But anyway, that's another story. But yeah, I just think the intention of the filmmaker is really important. And I think, you know, my other podcast, Bird Road, we get into a lot of, like, political issues on that show. But I think intention is something that's lost a lot lately in a lot of conversations.
Absolutely, man. And it makes it tough, you know. That's, like, the messy part in regards to, like, appreciating film, right? It's a really interesting medium. But, like, I'm glad that we have it, because I think that these discussions, the discourse, it's cool if we can kind of, like, be able to contextualize it, right?
Sure.
Like, be able to have a conversation about that, but then also kind of, like, focus on the art.
Yeah.
The fact that you can look at Waves and kind of get a sense of Malcolm Marie, because one, it's a very intimate story. You know, one's a family drama. This is a drama about two, you know, but just about two lovers, right? And essentially, we kind of get that in really unique ways. Like the thing that I think people kind of like were pissed off about with Waves is just that how the, you know, the focus of our protagonist shifted in a really kind of like jarring way.
Sure.
Like literally in like just this kind of like this scrim of color, almost like a kaleidoscope where we shift, you know, from Kelvin Harrison Jr.'s character's perspective. And then we go over to his little sister's perspective. And it was really jarring for people. Like it's done in a way that's not conventional. And this, I'm not going to say the presentation of Malcolm Marie wasn't conventional, but like Waves, it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People don't do well with movies that are arguments. And in screenwriting, you're kind of taught to like, if you have an argument, kind of find a way to get out of it because just audiences don't do well with it. And that's the entirety of this hour and 40 minute production.
And that will pop up in more puzzle pieces along the way. But what do you got for your first puzzle piece?
Yeah, absolutely, man. In my first puzzle piece, I kind of went something back to, I don't want to say childhood. All right, teenhood, right?
Okay.
And that is Brown Sugar. Rick Famuyiwa's Brown Sugar. It's starring Taye Diggs, Sanaa Lathan, this kind of classic. And this is a black film in regards to the way it's packaged, the way it was marketed, you know, the people behind the camera as well, of course, in front of the camera in regards to its stars. You know, you got, you know, like I said, Taye Diggs, Sanaa Lathan. You got Nicole Ari Parker, Boris Kodjo, Queen Latifah. Uniquely enough, we think about all these names in that film contrasting to Malcolm Marie, where we just have two actors.
Sure.
But their stories are similar in the sense that we get this narrative of a love story, except this is more so, these are friends who grew up together and never saw themselves so much so as anything more than friends. We're like contrasting, we have Malcolm Marie, who in the scope of this entire film, I was able to get a true idea of their relationship. But what reminds me between Brown Sugar and Malcolm Marie is the conversation, right? The conversation that we have outside of the actual argument, the crux of why Marie is mad at Malcolm, it's the other conversation in regards to their art.
Sure.
They both work in the entertainment industry, right? We have a director and screenwriter, and then we have a model who was a former actress. Their conversation is really talking about the love of what they do, how they do it, and like that's something that's like really tangible. In the same way with Brown Sugar, we have these people who are absolutely in love with music. They love the artistry, the rawness, the organicness. And you being a music guy, I'm not too sure if you've seen the movie or not, but like they talk about like what it was when music just used to be music, used to be fun, just right. Listening to it on your stoop. And then when it becomes this commodity and transforms into something else. And that's kind of like a bulk of the conversation that Marie and Malcolm are having, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're looking at his art and they're talking about in regards to doing a Lego movie, 40 Legos and a mule, like shit like that. Like I found that to be so funny. And it just reminded me about like the love of something, you know, that was like what they do and then how it would try to change them. And like, while that was maybe like a C or D thread inside of Malcolm Marie, it's still something that stuck with me.
Yeah. And I saw that movie way back when it first came out, but I think the infectiousness of hearing people who truly love art talk about art is,
yes,
that's very exciting. And then to have that as a through line along with a relationship, that's very, I mean, it's a perfect puzzle piece for this. I hadn't thought of it because I haven't seen it since so long ago. But yeah, it's a great puzzle piece to bring into this one. And that's one of those things where it's like with Malcolm and Marie, you are getting such a rich portrayal of a relationship, because relationships aren't just, you know, boy meets girl or boy meets boy or whatever it is and you know, fall in love and happily ever after. I mean, there are, whether it's these fights about actual relationship or just arguments about things in life, what, like pop culture or work or things like that, all that is part of real life relationships. And so for a movie to like really focus in on that, just, I really think it makes it a little bit more real. So yeah, great piece there. I'll go to my next piece. One of the early ones I had thought of is the 2008 drama Revolutionary Road from Sam Mendes with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet.
And damn, why didn't I think of that?
Oh my gosh. That's a brutal movie. And I mean, I just think the main reason I wanted to bring this one in is because John David Washington and Zendaya, let's, you know, be straight here, are two of the biggest stars of this current moment, you know? And setting them at each other's throats for 2 hours is absolutely what, you know, Revolutionary Road was about, with reuniting, like, such a chemistry of Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet after Titanic, and to bring them back together after so many years and just say, go at it, you two, you know? I think it's just really just such a great match. And I will say, I haven't seen that much John David Washington yet that I've loved. I like him as an actor. I loved him in this, though. And yeah. Zendaya, the same. I haven't really seen, I've never actually seen Euphoria. I'm sure that'll come up within this conversation. But, you know, I certainly know her from the Spider-Man movies, if nothing else. And so, but she's so good in this. And they're just both just totally bringing a game with this movie.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, when you really think about, like, there's something about John David Washington that is unique, right? Because when we say his name, you would think that he's probably been in, like, the public consciousness for, like, a long time, and he really hasn't.
Right.
Like, he's really only been the name since Black Klansman. That right. was 2018.
Yeah.
Like that was it. Like, yeah, he had Ballers before that, and then I believe, like, there was this police, you know, independent film, but, like, what really made him the name that he is, aside from his dad being his dad,
right
was Black Klansman. And yeah. I mean, what he got, I don't believe that he was nominated for an Academy. He was like, you know, he was in the shortlist and stuff like
that.
He was
nominated
for a Golden Globe for it. Yeah, it was definitely in the conversation, and it was good. You know, at least that's what the consensus was, right? I had some other stuff in that regard. Like, I absolutely loved Adam Driver inside the film, but he's still very much green, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I always clap it up because I think, you know, for it's weird, a young actor, he's in his mid-30s, but, like, for it gives me hope, shit. You know, for a young actor, the more that he is going to be around other greats, and Zendaya quickly has become that, like you said. I mean, we saw her from Disney starlet to now Beast, and I think he's now inside of another film with Robert De Niro and all these other people. So, like, I'm excited to see where the rest of his career goes, because, man, he really, really brought it in this movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, that's, you know, a funny thing before we move on to the next piece is I feel like a lot of people, because the Malcolm character is so, I don't know, abrasive maybe, or...
Took the word right out of my mouth.
Yeah, good word, okay. People hate the character so much. I found him so much fun to watch because he's just so, he's kind of like an idiot in a way, but also we've all been there. We've all been so sure of ourselves in the midst of, you know, some kind of argument or some kind of heated thing. And it's just, I don't know. I think it's a great character.
And actually, that, like, brings me to my next puzzle piece.
Okay, perfect.
Ari Gold in Entourage.
Nice.
So, I mean, obviously, all right, so we know who Sam Levinson is, right? Son of the great Barry Levinson. Some nepotism at work, but the guy is really, really good, right? He's young in his own right in his career, and I think that Sam has found a way to kind of bring in a lot of Hollywood. Malcolm is an amalgamation of so many different archetypes in Hollywood, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, for the folks that have been to, like, film classes inside of college, actually went to film school, or just been around people in the film industry, Malcolm is a lot of all of those different things, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, abrasive, big, loud, pointed. He will make sure that you will understand him at all costs until he's ready to stop for you trying to understand him. And Ari Gold and Entourage, like, I remember the first time when I watched this show, and granted, I watched it, I mean, I want to say really, really young, but, like, the show wasn't written for me as a young teenager, but, like, okay, it was in Hollywood, right? I want to move up to Hollywood. It had a lot of profanity, a lot of nudity, HBO show, right? And it's funny. And so much so, like, Ari is this big, mean, self-centered, egotistical jerk, but you kind of love him because he's damn good at what he does.
Right.
And I think that's what Malcolm is, right? So when I see Malcolm, I see, like, this kind of, like, even the way he moves and his mannerisms, the way he puffs up his chest and he brings his shoulders back. And he's, like, he is so in to who he is. And, like, when we first get introduced to him in the middle, and, you know, in the beginning of this film, you know, he's like, I killed this. I did this. And that's Ari. He's so big. And, like, the way, even the way he threw his fists at the air when he was outside, that just reminds me all the time when Ari used to get in these fights with Lloyd, and just would get, like, he just wants to, like, strangle, but he can't, but he always wants to get his point across. And the way that Ari argues is the same way that Malcolm is going at it. And it is venomous. It is mean. But there's also a part of it, like, he's really trying to make a point to try to get you to understand. And to be honest with you, if he didn't bother arguing with you, You wouldn't mean anything to him.
Right.
So for the folks that like look at this and like, well, why does Marie just walk away? Well, one, it's a movie. She walks away. There is no movie, yeah. You know? And Malcolm isn't just arguing to be like a bad guy. He actually has something to say. And there's a lot of validity in his comments. But the unique thing about this film, I don't think that the goal was for me to root for Malcolm or root for Marie. I think they're both equally right and wrong in a lot of points of this film.
Yeah.
And I think that's like kind of like what Arby was in Entourage.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, great piece, but also just speaking to like the characteristics of Malcolm, I mean, his codependency of like needing validation from Marie in all of his big ideas, whether he's right or wrong in all of them, you know, I just think it's just such a great trait. I mean, it's a toxic trait, but I mean, it's very real though. And it's, I think to like all of my, most outgoing, shall we say, LA friends. And it's like, there's so much of this in that whole like Hollywood scene and like those kinds of people. And, you know, I think that, you know, we could kind of take a quick detour to the biggest issue, I think, with the criticism with this movie is the whole, you know, return critique to critics. And, you know, critics being a part of that whole movie ecosystem as well, the Hollywood thing. And I think it's really interesting that critics kind of expose themselves to have such thin skins in this particular debate. It's a very strange thing. But maybe it's not strange, though. I mean, critics are, you know, tend to be sensitive people. You know, I know I am. I certainly can be. And that's a very real thing. And I guess, you know, it's okay to be offended by this movie talking back to you, but I don't think it makes the movie any less valid. I think the movie is saying this and you can reckon with it whether you like what it's saying or not.
Yeah, and I think it's been interesting seeing, you know, the critics who are kind of falling into Sam's like trap in a sense,
sure.
You know? I mean, so many of just like these blurbs on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that. I just got bored with the people. I had an emotional block and I never got engaged. A very stylish but ultimately empty performance. This is from a top critic. Like, what does that even sound like? I just got bored with the people. I don't know. I don't understand it. You know what I mean? Or you have like kind of like those more sanitized reviews coming from pundits who are afraid to kind of critique a film that has two black leads in it. Mm. And these are the things that I've noticed. I mean, shit, I've been in the game for several years now and I can kind of see it. And, you know, on one hand, while it can be labeled as an attack, and this was, for those that don't know, Sam incorporated a story, you know, that, you know, kind of an account in his own life, an incident, you know, between himself and an LA Times film critic for a review on Assassination Nation. So I guess if we can make that a mini puzzle piece, like it literally is a piece that fit with inside of the movie.
Sure,
right?
That review, nothing else. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, it's really pointed. And for some folks that may have taken them out the movie because they felt like they were no longer looking at Malcolm, that they were looking at Sam. Mm. But like, yo, this is the writer director. He can do whatever he wants.
That's
like,
right.
This is their art. And yeah, how thin skin, it's been really crazy. I mean, there's definitely truths in like that kind of rant. And it's really such a small part of the movie, to be honest with you. I think it's like what, a 10, 12 minute exchange. And most of that, you know, is his monologue. But my God, was it funny. I was cutting. I got a chance to watch in the theater. I just died. It was me and three other people, so I wasn't like, you know, being a nuisance to anybody, but my goodness, just the way that it was articulated was hilarious. And it was a positive review. You know, so at the same time that this could be, you know, criticism of the commentary, this is also still criticism of Sam, you know, like because it's
really so look self, at this guy. Self-deprecating, totally.
It really, really is. So I think it's really interesting at work there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm going to do a very, very out of left field puzzle piece. This one's very kind of ridiculous, but I was listening to your appearance on Real Spoilers, and they were talking about critics not liking this movie because he kind of preemptively is telling critics that, you know, he sees through their thing and that they're going to complain about this white writer writing these black characters to air his grievances. And I was thinking about that. And so this wasn't something directly from the movie. It was from that kind of point of conversation. I thought of 8 Mile and Eminem's B-Rabbit using what the people are going to say in their freestyle battles against him.
Yes.
preemptively using them in the first place, so that way they don't have anything to say. Now, of course, critics still had plenty to say, but they're not.
Irony!
So, but it still just made me think of it, and I wanted to throw it into the conversation anyway. So,
nah, I mean, I think that's absolutely fair. And like, you know, shout out for the listen for real spoilers. You know, it was an interesting point because I thought, man, you know, these creatives are now having a really unique license, right, to kind of get in the way of the criticism. And you said it earlier, our film commentary plays very much into the entire landscape of Hollywood, even though some people don't think so, right? Like, if an artist truly believes that critics don't matter, well, then they wouldn't be so affected by the words that we say about their art.
Sure.
Right? And our words have a lot of power, even though some of us don't think that it does. It really shapes an impression on our audience, which very much can impress upon whether people watch this movie or not, which means that a studio may just be less inclined sometimes to say, you know what? This didn't do it. Look what the critics are saying. It didn't make it into these rounds of awards groups. It didn't get any awards and stuff like that. We carry a lot of weight, you know? So it's really interesting. I don't know if creatively there's going to be like that kind of like preemptiveness going on, but shoot, 8 Mile came out what? Like 2000 and forever ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. I mean, Eminem is basically oldies at this point. So,
yeah. Oh my God. It's so crazy. I can't believe it. Yikes.
Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Yeah, keeping in the lieu of the performance, you know, I felt impressed by Ari Gold, with Malcolm's character. And I think with Marie's character, it'd be really hard to ignore, you know, the puzzle piece of Rue from Euphoria, HBO's Euphoria.
Okay.
Man, it's, she is, so you haven't got a chance to watch Euphoria, right?
I have not seen it, and I've always felt like I'm like the only person that hasn't seen the show, because it seems like everybody talks about how great it is.
It's really great. It's definitely a tough watch, right?
Okay.
It took me several months to get past the first episode. Mm-hmm. One, as a parent, it's really, I guess, like, as a parent, my tolerance for, like, really, like, gritty teen dramas has, like, gotten very, very low, because it is explicit.
It's like, and oh, it's like, damn.
you know, it's one of those things, depending upon where you are generationally, you're like, oh, you kids don't know how it was back in the day. But, like, every generation antes up, right? And I think that, and, you know, kind of looking at how Malcolm Marie came together, right? It's a quarantine film. And Sam very much has a great working relationship with Zendaya, who, of course, they worked together on Euphoria. And they wanted a project and a vehicle to be able to kind of work on during this time of quarantine. And they workshop so much of this screenplay with one another. And I've heard Zendaya even say inside of, you know, interviews leading up to the film and afterwards, where she very much felt comfortable with this, even though it was a much more vulnerable performance than she's ever done before. And this felt like an evolution of Rue. But like Marie, in comparison to Rue essentially is what Imani is, right? Like Imani, the character inside of Malcolm Marie and, you know, in Malcolm's film,
right,
is this kind of just drugged out mess of a woman. And that's exactly what Rue is. So it's interesting to be able to see this kind of this evolution from the more rough around the edges, completely damaged and torn up Rue, to the now Marie, who is just this more refined, but still can be able to have like some sting to her. You know, I think a lot of people talk about inside of this film, the bathtub scene, right? Where I think that she is doing an amazing performance, being vulnerable, but sitting there having to take these absolute barbs that are being delivered by Malcolm. And there's so much work that she's doing without any dialogue. It's in her face, it's in her eyes, and the way that her shoulders are like slightly above the water inside the tub. But then she knows how to be able to always give it. And there's really not many points in this film where I feel like, oh my God, we have to save Marie.
Right.
No. She's a lioness in her own right.
Oh, yeah.
And just like Rue, when it's needed most inside the story, she is downright like ruthless. And I love the fact that Marie in this film at the end of it is able to kind of do something similar to like what Rue is, where she knows how to give it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she may look like she's kind of like down and out or whatever, but like, bro, she absolutely brings, she reads Malcolm to the point where I feel like he really did have a change. So yeah, that the Rue puzzle piece with Euphoria to this film, you see the connection.
I need to watch it, I think. And for the record, I did not like Assassination Nation as far as this director is concerned, but I love this and I need to see Euphoria. And I do find it interesting, like from everything I've kind of read, I get the feeling that it's got a somewhat similar tone to Malcolm and Marie, which I mm-hmm. find it interesting that people maybe weren't expecting something like this from him, when it seems like that's kind of his thing a little bit.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's weird. You know, I watched the trailer once, and I think that there's such an elegance to when you see the trailer. You obviously know that these folks are going to get into a heated, you know, battle. Sure. And I've been trying to really... I really try to go into a film as cold as possible, right? I'll watch a trailer once. I'm trying to ignore everything else because right. I just want the film to be able to just kind of wash over me cold. And, but like, yeah, just knowing who wrote and direct this. And then, you know, they even dropped, you know, the most recent episode of Euphoria a few weeks before this film premiered. So it's like, and very much the conversation that's had between Coleman Domingo, who was also working inside of Assassination Nation, right? Mm-hmm. Some people say, you know, these words don't feel real, right? Okay, but it's the same words in the writing style that we saw inside of Euphoria, and that show was being praised for like how authentic it felt.
Yeah.
So I found it really peculiar that the writing styles, you felt like there was no similarities to. I think it's quite similar.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I didn't include it as a puzzle piece, but I definitely considered Quentin Tarantino just in general, his mm-hmm. writing style as a possible puzzle piece when I was putting together my list. Also Kevin Smith as well.
Yeah.
But these people who, yes, it's heightened dialogue, but that, when has that been a problem before? Like when did we not enjoy that, you know?
And if anything, this has more relevance to be a heightened dialogue because the people who are giving the dialogue aren't just a regular Joe and Schmo. He's a writer, director, and an actress.
Yeah,
you know, like when you talk in regards to your field of interest, your dialogue in that particular field is going to be on display. Like I'm pretty sure that when you are going at it with somebody in regards to music, that like it's going to sound very differently than to anybody, to a general audience. So I can understand for some folks that may say, I feel like I couldn't relate. I understand these people are in a really different place in their life, right? You know, sure. But it's kind of like in the same way if I'm like Velvet Buzzsaw, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess another little small puzzle piece, right? With Velvet Buzzsaw, it's literally a film kind of making fun of like the snooty tootie like art world,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And obviously that dialogue is going to be, you know, indicative of how those folks speak.
That's those people.
But it's how they speak.
Yeah. Yeah, a writer-director like this Malcolm character is going... There's no way he's not going to speak like this. It's just... it absolutely. Well, I will go on to my next piece. And this, I think, was another kind of obvious one, but I think it has to be in the conversation here. And that's another Netflix movie, one that got a lot of awards attention in the way that this movie should be getting. And that's Marriage Story from Noah Baumbach from 2019.
Yep.
Another movie with two characters who are just absolutely going at it, and also happen to be a director and his wife, mm-hmm. also having that kind of show business, you know, line going through everything that's happening within their also falling out in their relationship. But yeah, Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver just giving two huge performances in that movie. Also excellent, but I really, really prefer just how deeply we get into both sides of the arguments in Malcolm and Marie. Not just, and I mean that in two separate ways. I mean both sides as in the relationship and the work, you know, the film work and all that stuff, as well as both sides, meaning Malcolm and Marie, both of their own sides of the argument. I just feel like each side is richer and fully realized, and I know a lot of people love Marriage Story. I think it's a great movie. But if we're going to compare and contrast here, I just think Malcolm and Marie just does more with its, you know, also small world that it's set up for itself.
Yeah, I mean, I have to absolutely agree. Of course, Marriage Story is one of my puzzle pieces. So kind of like just to expound into more, you know, I think the thing that sticks out like a sore thumb from Marriage Story in connection to this film is that epic argument scene, right?
Sure.
What's unique to it is that kind of the way how traditionally you would see in a film, that super mean argument is such a small portion of Marriage Story, right?
Mm.
It takes a time kind of charting out like a regular narrative, you know? We're able to see both sides. We kind of see the fight. I mean, it is an argument throughout the entire film. It's just done in a way where there's other beats and other moods that kind of come in and other little scenes and stuff like that, right? But that specific like fight where they don't hold back. Well, essentially, you know, that's just Malcolm Marie, but the entirety of the film. But I still think like there's such a rawness to it that just like was magnetic to me,
yeah.
You know? And in the same way with Marriage Story, I never felt like I was being told who to root more for than another. I think they're both equally right at points and both equally wrong at points. And then ultimately, the biggest difference between the two is what happens at the end of the film. There's a sense of, the similarity between the two is there's a sense of acceptance, except one is more ambiguous than the other, right? Mm. In Marriage Story, we get a sense of this is their new normal, right? Everything that has happened up until like, you know, the ending of this film is pretty much painting the picture that they're going to find a way to make this new version of their family work. Where on the other hand, with Marriage Story, it's even more ambiguous. You know, I love the way that the film kind of like was, you know, the crescendo in this film, right? You know, we have Malcolm, which I truly believe is in a place of acceptance. His last few lines in the film is, "I love you, Marie. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you." And the film could have just ended right there.
Yeah.
But then the fact that Sam writes in for Marie, she responds, "You're welcome." And then we kind of get this epilogue, and we could have just ended right there. And they chose to give us a little bit more to where Malcolm frantically is waking up in the morning because Marie's not in bed.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, what's happening here, right? Like, you know, I thought everything was good. And then they kind of stand outside, but we do not have the intimacy of like knowing if there's any words being exchanged. We're pulled out from literally from like looking in the bedroom outside onto like this. I mean, it's weird. This movie's in black and white, but like, I feel like I can see the colors right. Sometimes, especially like when it's outside during the daytime and they just hold hands. And, you know, we have no idea what decisions being made, how they feel like they're going to go about the rest of the day, their week, their entire relationship, but it just felt different. But it was doing a lot of the same things that Marriage Story was. And, you know, even though, you know, what sticks out is that like that big argument scene, I think so many other, you know, similarities that you could find inside a Marriage Story. Like I said, the director and actress wife relationship, like it's all kind of right there. But I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Also, the the movie seems almost purposefully made to get you going back and forth on the sides and like who you think mm-hmm. is, you know, right in any given moment and all that stuff. And so I think that that's something that Marriage Story was a huge part of the conversation as well. And hopefully we'll see more memes come from Malcolm and Marie.
Oh my gosh. The Malcolm Marie TikToks have been so really, really funny.
So Yeah.
I swear, I'm going to start like doing some of my own, man, and just be like, hey. They're really, really good.
Amazing. All right. Before we move on to another puzzle piece, I think that's kind of a good place to squeeze in a movie that I haven't seen. I don't know if you've seen, but it's in every review of this movie. Who's Afraid of a Virginia Woolf? Have you ever seen it?
I have not.
I haven't either.
I feel like I'm not doing my job as a critic for not seeing. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's tons of like epic movies that like I should have watched that I just haven't.
Right.
But everybody like, you know, this is very Cassavetes-esque.
Yeah.
This is like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And I'm like, when I think of Virginia Woolf, I think of that book that I didn't read in high school. So I don't know.
Hey, I squeeze in one old movie a week if I can, you know. I'll get to it one of these days.
Yeah. But I've heard like that it's like really similar, but like I guess there's just a bit more characters and stuff like that.
So. Right, absolutely. And I remember that coming up with Marriage Story as well at the time. So right on. Well, do you have any more puzzle pieces?
I do. I've got one more, and this is probably gonna feel like a little weird, but it's Scream 2.
Okay.
Because I think it was I think it was the first time where I was like inspired to like study film in college because we get Neve Campbell, Sidney Prescott going to school, and we got Jamie Kennedy's character coming over, Randy coming over and stuff like that. And like the fact that we get a chance to kind of see what I experienced in film school, these film nerds nerd out in like an argument way about essentially like commentating on a film, right?
Yeah.
What was that? Oh my God, Timothy Oliphant, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes, it was, right? And like, it was just a really, really great scene. And I think that's where, I think that's what I love so much is that to some folks that just think when they watch Malcolm Marie, it was just all arguing. No, there was these moments of tension,
mm-hmm.
but then these moments of like brilliant civility mm-hmm. where they just like yuck it up. Like, even though she finds a way to kind of side with, you know, this LA Times film critic, she's like my spirit animal, right? Like, you know, I really am on her side and stuff like that. Like, she was very much like, you know, understanding. I don't think in any way she was like, yeah, Malcolm. No, I think like she was like in agreement of stuff like that for the most part. And I think that's what you get a lot in regards to that banter and back and forth between Randy and Timothy Oliphant's character in the film. And I think, you know, Sydney gets in there and kind of makes her point too. So I love that back and forth. And it's about a topic that is relevant to me in film and film appreciation. Yeah, so yeah, Scream 2 kind of, it gave me that vibe.
I love that. I love that. Anything that can, you know, kick off a Hollywood on Hollywood kind of conversation. Yes. There, you know, that's great. And that's one thing that I think should absolutely be stated. You know, we're not going to change any minds here. Probably people who went in this movie hating it, they still hate it, I'm sure. But this movie is really funny, along with being, you know, there are some really laugh out loud moments. I mean, the whole thing when he's looking for his wallet so he can get through the paywall.
The paywall thing. That was great.
I mean, there's the mac and cheese, there's just so many funny moments in this movie. And I think that, yeah, you know, people should not kind of discount how much humor is sown throughout this very heavy
movie. This
is
not Blue Jasmine.
Right. That's right.
I was thinking that as a puzzle piece, because I'm like, they definitely get this like really like ragey shit. Sure. I'm like, no, there's definitely a lot more comedy in this.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of comedy, though, I hadn't planned it this way, but my last puzzle piece, not a movie, but I thought it would be a good inclusion here. Just the art of stand-up comedy in general. I thought that this movie, in the same way that good stand-up does, really kind of shoves your face in like the very real worst moments and tendencies of ourselves, you know? And we've all been in this place of, arguments with a significant other and feeling like we're right and digging ourselves in deeper, even after we know maybe we should, you know, back off a little bit. And those are exactly the kind of things that stand-up comics love to point out in a good stand-up set. I mean, all of the greatest, you know, stand-ups, the, you know, Chris Rock's and, you know, Louis, I know is canceled, but Louis was the best, you know, back in his day. And all the best stand-ups really, really force you to reckon with those parts of yourself and see it play out, you know, in the observations that they're making. And I do love a good stand-up. And so I thought it would be a good thing to bring in here.
I think what I want to do, so I read the script twice now.
Okay. Right?
I think I want to see if I can take that LA film critic rant and turn into it like a stand-up, like 3 minutes.
Nice.
I'm going to see if I can do it. I'm going to see if I can chop it up. And I'm going to do that as my own TikTok.
I love it.
It's just so much funny, right? And the thing is, what a lot of people don't understand about stand-up is that, like you said, there's so much truth, and these skillful motherfuckers just find a way to be able to apply the comedy there with the setup and the punchline. It's all about their delivery and their charisma. And and that's what you're drawn to, you know, in John David Washington's performance. It's like, there's something about this guy you can't take your eyes off of him, right? Even though you know he's being a jerk.
Right.
But he's being a jerk in this really fun and kind of admiring way. You know? I call myself an adorable asshole, right?
Sure.
Because I think there's people out there who are assholes you just want to stay away from, but I'm the asshole you need in your life. Okay. You know what I'm saying? You know, you'd be sick if I was gone for a day or something like that. You know? You know? But yeah, damn, stand up. I like that. You know, and just the fact that, I don't know, I feel like it's like an old timey stand up because it's done in black and white and stuff too. Damn, this movie's pretty to look at too.
It is.
It's so pretty.
Very, very pretty to look at. It is really well shot. I'm sure the people who don't like this movie would say it's pretentious, but hey, you know what? You like other black and white movies, so get off of it, you know?
Yeah.
Come on. All right. So let's do the finished puzzle here, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts on Malcolm and Marie. We talked about Waves, Brown Sugar, Revolutionary Road, Entourage, 8 Mile, Euphoria, Marriage Story, Scream 2. We squeezed Who's Afraid of a Virginia Woolf in there as well. And then we also talked about stand-up comedy. And we also kind of squeeze in Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino a little bit towards the middle there. And in our trailer episode leading up to this, I had also mentioned Phantom Thread, so I just wanted to give that a shout out as well. Another very unhealthy relationship, let's just say. So, Colby, do you have any other thoughts on this that we didn't quite get to? I mean, I know you've already mentioned a lot of thoughts across a lot of other podcasts, but anything relating to this conversation?
Nah, man, I think it's just always interesting. The entire setup and premise of this pod. And it's not so much like there's nothing new under the sun. It's just like what we've already had that still inspires and breathes life. And there's so many different things. And, you know, what can we pull from these other films and other just topics that we've watched? And how does it help impress upon what we see and appreciate this particular film, right? Mm-hmm. Art is subjective, right? There's objective takes so we can apply critical analysis to, you know, more on the craft and technical side, in my opinion. But ultimately, like, art is subjective, and what you get from is what you get from. And I just think that we need to be a bit more mindful about what we bring to the table in regards to what we're coming to watch film in that regard, or even talk about it.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And it definitely leads into my closing thought, which is this movie to me, it goes in a trajectory along with two other movies from the last few years that I think people really just went into hating beforehand. And that is Darren Aronofsky's Mother and Todd Phillips' Joker. Two movies that people hated no matter what. It didn't matter what was going to come up on that screen from the time the opening credits started till the end credits ended. They already had their minds made up that this movie is bad. Not bad for any particular set of reasons, but just this movie is bad, and I'm going to find a way to fit it into that bad box. And I don't understand why people do it. I mean, like you said, people come to movies with baggage, and, you know, that is just part of being human. So I guess that really does kind of explain it, but it's like, it sucks. And I do hope that people, you know, try to be a little bit more mindful in the movies that they watch in, you know, saying that this is a particular vision by this filmmaker, by these actors, and not to write things off just, you know, because of some kind of preconceived notion.
Yeah.
So
beautifully said, brother.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Everybody is going to push back on this, no matter what I say.
So. Four star.
Well, I think that does it for Malcolm and Marie. Colby, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, man, I just got finished watching Judas and the Black Messiah this past week. And then immediately watched Nate Parker's American Skin.
Okay.
I'm filled with a lot of black rage. but what I was able to do is then watch To All the Boys I Loved Before, Always and Forever. That helped mellow me out.
Okay.
So those are my three most recent watches. And my God, To All the Boys I Loved Before, Always and Forever. Now streaming on Netflix, by the way. One of the greatest film trilogies of all time.
Right on. Like,
crazy.
Right on. Well, that's a good set of recommendations right there. So awesome. Well, hey, Colby, thank you so much for doing this. I'm glad to finally get you back on the show. Why don't you tell people where they can find you and everything you're up to?
Yeah, brother. Thanks so much for having me. Big fan of the podcast. Anytime you need me, I will be here. For those that want to go ahead and get in touch with your boy, or just follow me with what I'm doing. You can follow your boy. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Colby Told Me. When I'm in the mood to write, you can check out my website at ColbyToldMe.com. Listen to my podcast, the Colby Told Me podcast. Been on hiatus for a little bit, but should be back soon. So when they ask you where you heard it from, you can tell them Colby Told Me.
Have you been thinking about a film for quite some time now? Have you got nowhere to turn to talk about it? Well, the Film for Thought podcast is here for you. Every fortnight, I invite a guest on to talk about any film of their choice. It could be old or new, controversial or classic. If you have some thoughts about films, I want to discuss them. New episodes drop every second Friday, so make sure to come along and check out the Film for Thought podcast.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Malcolm and Marie. Thanks to Colby for joining me on that one. And let me know, what did you think of this conversation, everybody? What do you think about our thoughts on this movie, on the puzzle pieces, on everything we had to say? I know this is a very contentious movie, but hopefully you maybe went into it with an open mind and were interested to hear what we had to say on this one. So let me know. Get in touch. You can email me directly through the website, piecingpod.com, or, of course, get in touch on social media at piecingpod. So that does it for today. You can also make sure that you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts, especially if you like this show. And if you do like this show, make sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We appreciate your reviews. Supposedly they help get engagement and all that kind of stuff and get up in the charts and all those things. I love making this show. We're coming up on the beginning of year 4, actually, next week. So I'm going to keep doing this for a long, long time. So let's get some more reviews going, so that way I know what you guys are all thinking of the show. And also, like I said at the top of the show, we got that Patreon produced by David Rosen. The more subscribers we get, the more content we're going to make for it, whether it's piecing it together, awesome movie, or my music stuff. I got a lot of music I'm sitting on that I can release on there, and that's going to happen soon. Let me tell you, I just got to finish scoring this film. It's a lot of work. But there is a lot more content coming to that Patreon, so make sure to check that out. And speaking of my music, let's close this thing up with a song like I always do. And I think I'm going to go with a song called Never from my album An Unseen Sky, which that film that I am currently scoring, it's directed, written and directed by Chris Johnson, a filmmaker I've worked with a bunch now. And he actually made a music video for this song about a quarreling couple and where things go very badly. So I thought that would work its way into this conversation of Malcolm and Marie. Things go much worse for the couple in the center of Never, though. I will just say that. But you can check out that music video over on my YouTube channel, Music by David Rosen. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. But it's a very cool video, very sad and dark, which, I mean, who doesn't want a sad, dark music video, right? People love sad and dark music. But anyway, I am done self-deprecating. This is Never. I love this song, and it's from my album An Unseen Sky. And enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.